Chapter 15. He appeared to think this such a good joke that Mr. Pinch was quite sure it must be a capital one. Accordingly, he laughed too, and was fully persuaded that he enjoyed it very much. Then he settled his bill, and Mr. Chuzzlewit paid for the punch, and having wrapped themselves up to the extent of their respective means, they went out together to the front door, where Mr. Pecksniff's property stopped the way. "I won't drive, thank you, Mr. Pinch," apostrophe said Martin, getting into the sitter's place. "By the by, there's a box of mine. Can we manage to take it?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Oh, certainly," apostrophe said Tom. "Put it in, Dick, anywhere." Apostrophe, it was not precisely of that convenient size which would admit of its being squeezed into any odd corner, but Dick the hostler got it in somehow, and Mr. Chuzzlewit helped him. It was all on Mr. Pinch's side, and Mr. Chuzzlewit said he was very much afraid it would encumber him, to which Tom said, "Not at all," apostrophe though it forced him into such an awkward position, that he had much ado to see anything but his own knees. But it is an ill wind that blows nobody any good, and the wisdom of the saying was verified in this instance. For the cold air came from Mr. Pinch's side of the carriage, and by interposing a perfect wall of box and man between it and the new pupil, he shielded that young gentleman effectually, which was a great comfort. It was a clear evening, with a bright moon. The whole landscape was silvered by its light, and by the hoar frost, and everything looked exquisitely beautiful. At first, the great serenity and peace through which they traveled disposed them both to silence, but in a very short time the punch within them, and the healthful air without, made them loquacious, and they talked incessantly. When they were halfway home, and stopped to give the horse some water, Martin, who was very generous with his money, ordered another glass of punch, which they drank between them, and which had not the effect of making them less conversational than before. Their principal topic of discourse was naturally Mr. Pecksniff and his family, of whom, and of the great obligations they had heaped upon him. Tom Pinch, with the tears standing in his eyes, drew such a picture as would have inclined anyone of common feeling almost to revere them, and of which Mr. Pecksniff had not the slightest foresight or preconceived idea, or he certainly, being very humble, would not have sent Tom Pinch to bring the pupil home. In this way they went on, and on in the language of the story books until at last the village lights appeared before them, and the church spire cast a long reflection on the graveyard grass, as if it were a dial, alas, the truest in the world, marking, whatever light shone out of heaven, the flight of days and weeks and years, by some new shadow on that solemn ground. A pretty church. Apostrophe apostrophe said Martin, observing that his companion slackened the slack pace of the horse as they approached. "Is it not?" Apostrophe apostrophe cried Tom, with great pride. "There's the sweetest little organ there you ever heard. I play it for them."
"Apostrophe, indeed?"
Apostrophe apostrophe said Martin. "It is hardly worth the trouble, I should think. What do you get for that, now?"
Apostrophe, "Nothing," apostrophe answered Tom.
"Well," apostrophe returned his friend, "you are a very strange fellow,"
apostrophe, to which remark there succeeded a brief silence.
"When I say nothing," apostrophe observed Mr. Pinch, cheerfully, "I am wrong, and don't say what I mean, because I get a great deal of pleasure from it, and the means of passing some of the happiest hours I know. It led to something else the other day, but you will not care to hear about that, I dare say?"
Apostrophe apostrophe, "Oh yes I shall."
"What?"
Apostrophe, "It led to my seeing," apostrophe said Tom, in a lower voice, "one of the loveliest and most beautiful faces you can possibly picture to yourself."
Apostrophe, "And yet I am able to picture a beautiful one," apostrophe said his friend, thoughtfully, "or should be, if I have any memory."
Apostrophe, "She came," said Tom, laying his hand upon the other's arm, "for the first time very early in the morning, when it was hardly light, and when I saw her, over my shoulder, standing just within the porch, I turned quite cold, almost believing her to be a spirit. A moment's reflection got the better of that, of course, and fortunately it came to my relief so soon, that I didn't leave off playing. Apostrophe, why fortunately? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why? Because she stood there, listening. I had my spectacles on, and saw her through the chinks, in the curtains as plainly as I see you, and she was beautiful. After a while she glided off, and I continued to play until she was out of hearing. Apostrophe, why did you do that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, don't you see? Apostrophe, apostrophe, responded Tom. Because she might suppose I hadn't seen her, and might return. Apostrophe, and did she? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly she did. Next morning, and next evening too, but always when there were no people about, and always alone. I rose earlier, and sat there later, that when she came, she might find the church door open, and the organ playing, and might not be disappointed. She strolled that way for some days, and always stayed to listen. But she is gone now, and of all unlikely things in this wide world, it is perhaps the most improbable, that I shall ever look upon her face again. Apostrophe, you don't know anything more about her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, and you never followed her when she went away? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why should I distress her by doing that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tom Pinch. Is it likely that she wanted my company? She came to hear the organ, not to see me, and would you have had me scare her from a place she seemed to grow quite fond of? Now, heaven bless her! Apostrophe, cried Tom, to have given her but a minute's pleasure every day, I would have gone on playing the organ at those times until I was an old man, quite contented if she sometimes thought of a poor fellow like me as a part of the music. And more than recompensed, if she ever mixed me up with anything she liked as well as she liked that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the new pupil was clearly very much amazed by Mr. Pinch's weakness, and would probably have told him so, and given him some good advice, but for their opportune arrival at Mr. Pecksniff's door, the front door this time, on account of the occasion, being one of ceremony and rejoicing. The same man was in waiting for the horse who had been adjured by Mr. Pinch in the morning, not to yield to his rabid desire to start, and after delivering the animal into his charge, and beseeching Mr. Chuzzle within a whisper never to reveal a syllable of what he had just told him in the fullness of his heart, Tom let the pupil in, for instant presentation. Mr. Pecksniff had clearly not expected them for hours to come, for he was surrounded by open books, and was glancing from volume to volume, with a black lead pencil in his mouth, and a pair of compasses in his hand, at a vast number of mathematical diagrams, of such extraordinary shapes, that they looked like designs for fireworks. Neither had Miss Charity expected them, for she was busied, with a capacious wicker basket before her, in making impracticable nightcaps for the poor. Neither had Miss Mercy expected them, for she was sitting upon her stool, tying on the oh good gracious, the petticoat of a large doll, that she was dressing for a neighbor's child really, quite a grown-up doll, which made it more confusing, and had its little bonnet dangling by the ribbon from one of her fair curls, to which she had fastened it lest it should be lost or sat upon. It would be difficult, if not impossible, to conceive a family so thoroughly taken by surprise as the Pecksniffs were, on this occasion. Bless my life! Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, looking up, and gradually exchanging his abstracted face for one of joyful recognition. Here already! Martin, my dear boy, I am delighted to welcome you to my poor house. Apostrophe, apostrophe, with this kind greeting, Mr. Pecksniff fairly took him to his arms, and patted him several times upon the back with his right hand the while, as if to express that his feelings during the embrace were too much for utterance. But here, apostrophe, he said, recovering, are my daughters, Martin, my two only children, whom if he ever saw them, you have not beheld, these sad family divisions, since you were infants together. Nay, my dears, why blush at being detected in your everyday pursuits? We had prepared to give you the reception of a visitor, Martin, in our little room of state, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, smiling, but I like this better, I like this better. Apostrophe, apostrophe, O blessed star of innocence, wherever you may be, how did you glitter in your home of ether, when the two Miss Pecksniffs put forth each her lily hand, and gave the same, with mantling cheeks, to Martin? How did you twinkle, as if fluttering with sympathy, when Mercy, reminded of the bonnet in her hair, hid her fair face, and turned her head aside, the while her gentle sister plucked it out, and smote her with a sister's soft reproof, upon her buxom shoulder? And how, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, turning round after the contemplation of these passages, and taking Mr. Pinch in a friendly manner by the elbow, how has our friend used you, Martin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, very well indeed, sir. We are on the best terms, I assure you. Apostrophe, old Tom Pinch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pecksniff, looking on him with affectionate sadness. Ah! It seems but yesterday, that Thomas was a boy fresh from a scholastic course. Yet years have passed, I think, since Thomas Pinch and I first walked the world together. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Pinch could say nothing. He was too much moved. But he pressed his master's hand, and tried to thank him. And Thomas Pinch and I, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, in a deeper voice, will walk it yet, in mutual faithfulness and friendship. And if it comes to pass that either of us be run over in any of those busy crossings which divide the streets of life, the other will convey him to the hospital in hope, and sit beside his bed in bounty. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, well, well. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he added in a happier tone, as he shook Mr. Pinch's elbow hard. No more of this. Martin, my dear friend, that you may be at home within these walls, let me show you how we live, and where. Come. Apostrophe, with that he took up a lighted candle, and, attended by his young relative, prepared to leave the room. At the door, he stopped. You'll bear us company, Tom Pinch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I, cheerfully, though it had been to death, would Tom have followed him, glad to lay down his life for such a man. This, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, opening the door of an opposite parlor, is the little room of state I mentioned to you. My girls have pride in it, Martin. This, apostrophe opening another door, is the little chamber in which my works, slight things at best, have been concocted. Portrait of myself by Spiller. Bust by Spoker. The latter is considered a good likeness. I seem to recognize something about the left-hand corner of the nose, myself. Apostrophe, Martin thought it was very like, but scarcely intellectual enough. Mr. Pecksniff observed that the same fault had been found with it before. It was remarkable it should have struck his young relation too. He was glad to see he had an eye for art. Various books you observe, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, waving his hand towards the wall, connected with our pursuit. I have scribbled myself, but have not yet published. Be careful how you come upstairs. This, apostrophe opening another door, is my chamber. I read here when the family suppose I have retired to rest. Sometimes I injure my health rather more than I can quite justify to myself, by doing so. But art is long, and time is short. Every facility you see for jotting down crude notions, even here. Apostrophe, these latter words were explained by his pointing to a small round table on which were a lamp, divers sheets of paper, a piece of India rubber, and a case of instruments, all put ready, in case an architectural idea should come into Mr. Pecksniff's head in the night. In which event he would instantly leap out of bed, and fix it forever. Mr. Pecksniff opened another door on the same floor, and shut it again, all at once, as if it were a blue chamber. But before he had well done so, he looked smilingly round, and said, "Why not? ... Martin couldn't say why not, because he didn't know anything at all about it. So Mr. Pecksniff answered himself, by throwing open the door, and saying, "My daughter's room. A poor first floor to us, but a bower to them. Very neat. Very airy. Plants you observe. Hyacinths. Books again. Birds. ... These birds, by the by, comprised, in all, one staggering old sparrow without a tail, which had been borrowed expressly from the kitchen. Such trifles as girls love are here. Nothing more. Those who seek artless splendor, would seek here in vain." With that he led them to the floor above. "This," said Mr. Pecksniff, throwing wide the door of the memorable two-pair front, "is a room where some talent has been developed, I believe. This is a room in which an idea for a steeple occurred to me, that I may one day give to the world. We work here, my dear Martin. Some architects have been bred in this room. A few, I think, Mr. Pinch?" Tom fully assented. And, what is more, fully believed it. "You see," said Mr. Pecksniff, passing the candle rapidly from roll to roll of paper, "some traces of our doings here. Salisbury Cathedral from the north. From the south. From the east. From the west. From the southeast. From the northwest. A bridge. An almshouse. A jail. A church. A powder magazine. A wine cellar. A portico. A summer house. A nice house. Plans, elevations, sections, every kind of thing. And this," he added, having by this time reached another large chamber on the same story, with four little beds in it, "this is your room, of which Mr. Pinch here is the quiet sharer. A southern aspect, a charming prospect. Mr. Pinch's little library, you perceive. Everything agreeable and appropriate. If there is any additional comfort you would desire to have here at any time, pray mention it. Even to strangers, far less to you, my dear Martin, there is no restriction on that point." It was undoubtedly true, and may be stated in corroboration of Mr. Pecksniff, that any pupil had the most liberal permission to mention anything in this way that suggested itself to his fancy. Some young gentlemen had gone on mentioning the very same thing for 5 years without ever being stopped. "The domestic assistants," said Mr. Pecksniff, "sleep above, and that is all." After which, and listening complacently as he went, to the encomiums passed by his young friend on the arrangements generally, he led the way to the parlor again. Here a great change had taken place, for festive preparations on a rather extensive scale were already completed, and the two Miss Pecksniffs were awaiting their return with hospitable looks. There were two bottles of currant wine, white and red, a dish of sandwiches, very long and very slim, another of apples, another of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.